two sides, one truth. Where raw realities of humanity's dark side meets honest dialogue. Unbiased, uncensored, unfiltered. This is Murderlust.
Welcome to Season 1, Episode 14 of Murderlust. Today we are discussing the Michelle Wilkins case. I'm Amber, and joining me is Ava. Happy Easter!
Thank you. You sounded a little scratchy on that. I almost said, let's do a redo, but you're still recovering, correct?
I am. I'm down, I don't know, several octaves, and I do feel like I'm a karaoke star. And so now, like, Kid Rock is in my range, Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, all of these man voices.
Well, I mean, some may say it's sexy.
Sure.
I've had that myself. Remember, they said I had a husky voice.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it.
Nice gentleman did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, take it while you got it.
Yeah, yeah. I saw you were looking like a real baddie today.
Oh, really? You saw my Facebook?
I did. I didn't like click any buttons, but I was scrolling.
No hearts?
Nope,
thanks.
Not yet. I'm going to go back and heart every one of them.
Oh,
I just can't wait.
I cannot wait either. You know, it gives me that adrenaline dopamine hit. At the age I'm at, having even one person obsessed with you is really an accomplishment.
Oh, 100%. So we were driving in the car the other day and my son was like, okay, I'm going to tell you something, but don't be mad. You know, immediately your heart sinks. You don't want to promise that you're not going to be mad because you have no idea what's coming. And he could see that I was struggling internally with whatever he was going to drop. Then he goes, well, I guess you wouldn't be mad, but you can't say anything. Then proceeds to tell me that all of his 14-year-old friends think I'm hot.
All right. Now, I mean, we're no pedophiles on this show, but did it not make you feel a little extra good? Right?
No, it.
Or is that sick of me?
Did.
I kind of feel sick for saying that, actually. Wow, I'm gross.
Yeah, I don't know what is wrong with you because this is like the fourth pedophile thing you've said on this show, but
it's MILF. It's a MILF thing.
It is.
That's exactly what MILF stands for,
no,
right?
No.
Well, maybe not at 14.
No.
All right, let's keep moving on.
But before you made it weird,
I'm having some internal conflict.
So they still think that I'm a hot mom, even though I'm a fatty. So anyways, then I was telling my brother the story, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, more like a baddie. So that's why I had to call you a baddie today.
Oh, well, that's very kind. Yes, we're both baddies in our own right. My son has never told me that. He's only 12, though. I don't think it kicks in yet, right?
Oh, no. If he hasn't hit that middle school, you know, you'll know. You'll know when it's time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as of now.
And it sounds like you'll enjoy it.
Oh, God, that sounded disgusting. No, no, I won't. I won't enjoy it. I just disregard everything I said leading up to this. Trust me, I am attracted to actually older men now. It's weird.
I know.
When you age, now that I'm almost 40, I don't find like 25-year-olds attractive.
No.
I really don't. I find 40 and above attractive, which is odd.
Oh.
Kind of, right? Because I feel like older men find younger women still attractive.
This whole Kristen Cavallari dating one of the Montana boys or whatever, I understand in his age group, he is a very attractive kid, but that's not hot to me in my early 40s.
Not at all. That's odd to me. So I'm not just saying that to defend myself from my prior comments. I actually do live by that motto because it really truly is how I am. I am all about an older man, an older gentleman.
Sure.
How was Puerto Rico?
The update everyone's been waiting for. It was absolutely amazing. Amazing.
Nothing good to report then, huh?
No, nothing super fun to share. I did get attacked by birds.
Mm-hmm. Freaking hilarious.
Yeah. My niece, very well behaved, her normal sweet self. The only comment I would say is that I'm driving, I'm navigating very narrow streets, sometimes at high speeds, and my sister in the passenger seat doing the whoa, whoa, you know, and almost killed us about 400 times.
No human trafficking incidents then? We're all clear?
No, I mean, for the most part.
Wow. Sounds like a really boring vacation, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, if you call 85 and sunny every day boring, then I guess it was.
Wow. You just flexed right there. Today, we're covering a highly unusual and rare crime termed fetal abduction, also known as cesarean kidnapping. I'm sure you have an idea of what this entails. Usually, the perpetrator of such a crime is most often a woman of childbearing age who incapacitates a near-term pregnant woman, extracts the fetus through what most say is a crude cesarean section, and then subsequently attempting to claim the child as their own. Oftentimes, the woman committing this heinous act does so in a desperate attempt to keep a boyfriend, keep a husband, fearing that these men in their life may leave them if they don't have a child to bind that relationship together. These women may pretend to be pregnant, they may have recently lost a baby due to miscarriage, or may even suffer from a medical condition that prevents them from becoming pregnant. Between 1964 and 2019, there were 327 cases of infant abductions, with only 6% of those abductions being cesarean kidnapping. So that's about 19 of those 327 cases, a very, very small minority. One of the first known cases occurred in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1987. Cindy Ray was 8 months pregnant when she was kidnapped at Kirtland Air Force Base outside of a prenatal clinic. The abductor, Darcy Pierce, was only 19 years old when she strangled Cindy to death and used her car keys to open her womb, snatching the fetus, later named Amelia, who would survive. In 1996, 17-year-old Caritha Curry was murdered by her 29-year-old friend Felicia Scott after a night out on the town together. Curry was found 3 months later stuffed in a garbage can at the bottom of a 50-foot ravine with several gunshot wounds to the head and her torso sliced open, void of her baby girl she had been carrying. The baby did survive in this situation. 2006, in East St. Louis, Illinois, pregnant Jamela Tunstall was murdered by her childhood friend Tiffany Hall. Her unborn baby was cut from her abdomen with a pair of scissors. Neither the mother nor the baby survived. Hall also drowned Tunstall's three other children, ages 1, 2, and 7, and left their bodies in the washer and dryer machines at the family's apartment complex. This brings us to 2015 in Longmont, Colorado, and the case we will be covering today. Dinell Lane, a 34-year-old woman desperately wanting a baby, would find her perfect victim, 26-year-old Michelle Wilkins, through a Craigslist ad for free maternity clothing. Dinell's charade of being pregnant had come to an end. Her family, her friends, they were beginning to question her pregnancy after 10 months had passed with no baby. Anticipating backlash from her family, her friends, and most importantly to Dinell, there was the possibility of losing her husband after he found out about her lie. She planned, she researched, and eventually executed her horrific vision in hopes of solving this self-made problem. However, what Dinell did not anticipate, the X factor that she could never have planned for, was her victim's incredible will to survive and the strength only a mother possesses in the face of harm coming to their child. January 2015, a post on a private Facebook group for breastfeeding advice.
Non-breastfeeding advice needed. I have a friend whose wife is pregnant, and he confided to my fiance that she refuses to go to the doctor. Her whole pregnancy has been sketchy. She supposedly had a hysterectomy, but then got pregnant, which I know can happen, and she wouldn't let him go to the doctors with her. Then she was supposedly due mid-November, then mid-December. Here it is, mid-January, and still no baby. I'm confused. Is it considered child endangerment if she won't go to the doctor? I don't know how long it's been, but her husband is concerned.
Okay, I'm even more confused because you absolutely cannot have a baby after a hysterectomy. The definition of a hysterectomy is to remove the uterus, so no.
You are correct. And this is the perfect example of why we should not trust comments on Facebook. In response, the doula who moderated this page replied, "This is a red flag for me. She may be attempting to find someone whom she can get a baby from in order to present this to her husband. I know this is all conspiracy theory-like, but this should be taken seriously. If she is claiming to be pregnant but has had a hysterectomy, she has an ectopic pregnancy, which would require medical intervention in order for the baby to survive and mom to survive. She has likely made this up, maybe because she is grieving her lost uterus and the fact that she can no longer carry a baby in her womb. My concern would be for any pregnant woman being around her, because if she is desperate, she may do the unmentionable and harm the mother and take the baby." Now, the friend whom this post originated about is a 34-year-old Longmont, Colorado woman named Dinelle Lane. About 10 months prior to this post, in April of 2014, an excited Dinelle had just announced her pregnancy to all her friends, all her family. And this came as a huge shock to all, considering they were all under the impression that Dinelle had undergone a hysterectomy sometime prior. But the family ran with it. Dinelle had never given them a reason to discredit her.
So the family knows she had a hysterectomy, and they're still allowing her to say she's pregnant.
Correct.
They're just all going along with it.
Correct. The father of the child was David Ridley, and this was her fiancé. David, Dinelle, and her two teenage daughters from a previous marriage lived together in a home, and they seemed to be a happy blended family. This was Dinelle's second serious relationship. In 2007, her first marriage to a man named Jason, the father of her two teenage daughters, dissolved. Her ex, Jason, stated,
"We didn't have much to do with each other after the split. There was a certain point where we tried to work things out, but it was best that we didn't."
He didn't say, like, she's mentally insane. It just didn't work out for them.
By all accounts, her ex-husband, and he's been in several interviews, has stated that she was normal. In fact, a lot of people have. We'll get further into that. Didn't seem to have any ill will toward her. It seemed to be a fairly harmonious split after the fact. They weren't butting heads. He just looked at her like you or I guess. Hot, smart, you know, MILFs.
Yeah, no, I totally can understand. Wow, weird.
Her ex would go on to describe Dinelle as just your typical woman, and that during their 12 years together, they were happily married and had no issues. Now, I'm not exactly sure what your typical woman is, but Dinelle was one.
I feel like that's a man thing to say, right?
A mansplation?
Yeah, a mansplation. They all think we're all exactly the same, which is furthest from the truth, but I'm sure he's like every other man out there.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as a reason for their split, Jason really couldn't give any singular reason or specific issue. However, in the divorce paperwork, it showed that Jason was charged with third-degree domestic violence against Dinelle. So it seems that there may have been some abuse. On top of this, the couple also experienced the loss of a child together, which most likely put strain on their marriage as well.
You can't tell me losing a child didn't maybe knock something around in her head. You know what I'm saying?
No, I totally agree. I think adversity and pain are the greatest teachers in life. When you are taught things, you can take it any way you want. So it can make you a better person or it can make you batshit crazy. That's just how it goes. Pain has the most effect on us as humans. So no doubt this affected her, whether it was good, bad. In 2000, the couple had expanded their family and she gave birth to a baby boy they named Michael Alexander Cruz, who they lovingly referred to as Little Mac. Now, sadly, in 2002, when Michael was only 19 months old, tragedy did strike the family. Michael and his sisters had been eating, they were playing a game, and Dinelle was off in another area of the house doing what moms do. So she's probably doing laundry or something. Dinelle came to check on the children, she found Michael motionless in a decorative backyard fish pond. Oh. It was a drowning. There was a thorough investigation into Michael's death at that time, and it was labeled, in fact, an accidental drowning. They did not find any foul play when they investigated this. Just a side note, they did reopen this investigation after this whole new situation came to light with what she does to Michelle Wilkins, and we'll get into that. And again, they found no foul play involved. They felt satisfied with that. So this indeed does seem to be an accident. It should be noted also that Dinelle's current pregnancy in 2015, claiming she is pregnant, she said it was a baby boy. And I'm not sure this has a conscious direct connection to this loss of her son in the past, but it's an interesting point that the child she lost years prior was a boy, and the one she is currently claiming to be pregnant with is also a boy. I mean, I suppose it's a 50-50, right?
Well, I mean, it's 2024. It could be 25%. I don't know, 10%. Yeah. There's a lot of options out there. God, we should probably cut that out. We're going to get fucking...
Nope, absolutely not.
All right. Anyways, but I don't think it's a coinkydink. No, I don't, actually.
I don't think so either. After Dinelle and her ex, Jason, lost Michael, this is when her hysterectomy comes into play. It was after this loss that Dinelle announced that she was going to have this hysterectomy. She told all of her family, her friends, noting that neither her nor Jason wanted any more children. They were done. I can understand that too at that point. However, don't you feel like sometimes when people experience the loss of a child, don't you feel like sometimes they want to try again?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. More often than not, I would say yes, you want to do it again.
Yeah.
The only time I could see is if it was similar to this, where it's just so traumatic that maybe you can't even imagine going through that pain again. That's the only time I could see. But I've lost two children before they came into the world. And yeah, both times I pretty much immediately wanted to try again.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that is the path I've seen some people close to me go on. I had a different path because my daughter who passed away, she was a triplet. So it was a little bit different. You know my whole situation. But yeah, I agree. It seems like most of the time these people want to follow it up. Dinelle did not want to at this point in time. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just an observation. Now, following the separation from Jason, Dinelle was looking for a place to stay with her daughters. I imagine she was probably feeling quite overwhelmed. She had lost a child. She was getting a divorce. She would find her next home through a Craigslist ad. I mean, and this will come into play later, but it looks like she's an avid Craigslist fan.
Well, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of things you could find on Craigslist.
Oh, that was the thing. Facebook Marketplace has taken over, but I do remember Craigslist.
Yeah.
A man named Robert Walsh was looking for a roommate to live with him and his daughter. So Dinelle answered this Craigslist ad, moved herself and her two daughters into Robert's Golden, Colorado home. And believe it or not, this living arrangement actually worked out pretty well with Dinelle and Robert remaining just friends. I say this because it almost seems inevitable that when a man and a woman of the same age living together with children, most of the time they do eventually become romantic. But this was not the case.
Hmm. I actually feel like it would kill my self-esteem a little bit to not have my roommate want to sleep with me.
Wow. That's an interesting fact. But yeah, I mean, I could see it. I've never thought about it that way, but that's why we have you here. You're the other half.
Uh-huh.
Always going down those rabbit holes. Really appreciate it.
You can't tell me that that would not bother you, right? Like,
yeah, if he doesn't want to bang it out with me, I'm sure it would be a self-esteem dagger.
Yeah.
To the heart.
It would.
Well, I guess Dinelle took it okay because Robert remembers her being, again, a nice woman. He stated in an interview, "She was really soft-spoken and friendly. She would joke. She was nice to have around. A normal woman."
What is with these men?
I don't know. What is a normal woman, though, really? Now, we've heard this twice from two different men. We probably need to look into this further.
We're going to have to do, like, a survey. You know what? I'm going to send some text right now, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, good call. Now, next door to the duo, Robert and Dinell, was a man named Matt Voss. Dinell also befriended him. Again, platonic relationship. Matt recalls,
"She was the sweetest person I knew at that time. She was one of the better people in my life. She was a positive influence."
According to Voss, Dinell had confided in him about her past and the loss of her son, Michael.
"We told each other about stuff, and that was something that happened to her in her life. She decided to talk about it, but she wasn't completely distraught about it. She thought about it a lot, but it never seemed like anything that overwhelmed her. It just seemed like she needed to get it out."
Keep in mind, when Matt Voss knew Dinell, this was in 2011. Michael drowned in 2002. So there's a 9-year difference here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a little.
So saying that she thinks about this a lot after 9 years passing, to me, would be a little concerning. And I can say this. God, I love how I have all my cards. I have the handicapped child card. I have the death child card. You know what I'm saying?
You're racking them up.
Yeah. So because I have the death child card, pulled it out of life, I'm going to pull from my experience with that card. And my daughter did pass away 8 years ago this past March. About the same amount of time has passed for me and Dinell up to this point in our case. Judge me if you'd like. I think that's already been done on this podcast, so go ahead and do it again. I do not think about my daughter a lot, as Matt stated Dinell was thinking about Michael. I know everyone is different. I am, however, under the mentality that you have to continue living without dwelling, especially when you have other children to care for, which Dinell did. The fact that Dinell was still thinking about her deceased son a lot, as Matt Voss says, is really actually a red flag to me.
I appreciate your dead child card insight. You have something to pull from there. I gave birth to a baby at 20-something weeks, and she didn't live, but I have a calendar reminder of when she was born because I don't remember the date every single year. So I do think all of us cope in different ways and we have to move on with our lives. If you're living in the past for that long, you can't tell me you're not struggling. You have to be.
For sure. This is a facet of life that is incredibly hard. The only reason we're pointing it out is because it is a red flag. And while I can have compassion and empathy for this, and I would always show that to someone, we're looking at this in a different light. And yeah, this is off. 9 years later, you shouldn't be still thinking about it a lot. Despite her having these feelings and maybe some mental issues hanging around, both Matt and Robert never witnessed Dinell using any drugs or addictive substances to cope. She seemed really to be pretty straight-laced. I guess we could even go as far to say a typical straight-laced woman. That wasn't funny?
Well, some of the texts are coming in. This makes it a little bit more funny. I said, if someone said she was a normal woman, what would that mean to you? This person says, I consider it a purple unicorn. There's no such thing as a normal woman. You're all fucking crazy. And that,
wow.
This is impossible. These people do not even know each other. This other person said, I would say there's no such thing. It's a fictional character. Unicorn. She was a normal woman. And then she cut someone's head off. LOL. These men do not even know each other.
Well, does that tell us that Robert and Matt maybe were kind of sugarcoating it a bit?
Yeah.
For a story? We're getting the complete opposite answer, and even one that joked about cutting someone's head off. Huh. Let me know if anything else interesting comes in, but that really sums it up for me, I guess. Dinell's life did start to go downhill a bit beginning in 2012, a turning point of sorts. Dinell, who had her nursing aide's license and worked in the field, came home to Robert and Matt and told them that she had been fired from her job. Now, I have no other details on this. There's lots of different reasons for her to be fired. She didn't quit. This was a firing. Subsequently, Dinell was also jailed when she came in contact with officers at her rental home with Robert. They realized she had a failure to appear warrant, so they took her into custody. Officers were actually there for a situation between Robert and his ex. Sadly for Dinell, she was the individual who answered the door when they came knocking. They ran her information and they arrested her on the spot. Shortly after this arrest, Robert did bail Dinelle out of jail. I have a feeling he probably felt a bit guilty since this was something that involved himself. It was at this point that the two amicably parted ways, and I can see why. Robert would end up seeing Dinelle again in 2013 at a gas station.
She was getting gas, and she was like 8 months pregnant. She was definitely big, pregnant, and she was happy and smiling. She moved like a pregnant woman does. If she was faking it, she wouldn't have the movement of a pregnant woman. She was definitely pregnant.
He went on to say in this interview,
I gave her a hug that day, and she went her way and I went mine. And now there hasn't been any mention of this child that she was pregnant with. It makes me wonder if maybe something happened to that baby, and maybe that's what caused this incident.
This incident with Michelle Wilkins wasn't until a year later. He's saying he saw her in 2013 and she was already a full-term pregnant woman, and he is adamant that she was. However, there is no known record of Dinelle giving birth in 2013 or 2014, nor is there any record from friends and family that she was even pregnant in 2013. So she was already faking it prior to any of this other stuff going down.
So weird.
This is also the time she meets her current fiancé, David Ridley. According to David, Dinelle had told him when they met that her tubes were tied. So this is new, not a hysterectomy. Her tubes were tied and she couldn't have any more children. And David was happy about this because he had his own children. Dinelle had her two teenage daughters. He didn't want any more kids.
Tubes being tied, I would say, there is a way better chance that you get pregnant with your tubes being tied versus a hysterectomy. Significant difference.
Right. And I don't really know which one it is because I've heard both. Maybe she didn't get any of it done. Maybe she did get one done. I'm guessing she did, but she was changing her story as to exactly what procedure she had done. And like you said, I know she did research into this stuff. She must have found that it is possible to become pregnant again after your tubes are tied. And there are women who it happens to. I've met a few myself. It was the shock of their life. Fucking scary as shit. No thanks. You know? Can you imagine? Oh my God. No. Sweating, thinking about it.
Oh my God.
Just a short time after this conversation she had with David about her tubes being tied, she could no longer have children, she told him that she was pregnant. It's a miracle. And I'm not sure exactly how this convo went, considering her changing stories of infertility. Either way, David decided to embrace the news. He didn't want any more kids, but he would end up proposing to Dinelle in hopes of making them a family.
Oh, God.
I also imagine this is partly where Dinelle's drive to become and stay pregnant originates, because this is how she became engaged. She does not want to lose that. Dinelle would tell David that this child was a male and that the due date was November 14th. As you can imagine, they have a household full of girls because David's children were girls. Dinelle's children were girls. David was even more excited to become the father of a boy. He didn't see this ever happening in his future or his lifetime. He thought he was done. So this was actually a happy point for them. Over the next year, Dinelle would post pictures of her growing bump on social media. She would post ultrasounds. The couple's friends even threw them a baby shower. And I've seen pictures of Dinelle and David at their baby shower. It looks like any baby shower you would see. She was good at this.
If she hadn't had her tubes tied and like everybody knew about that, I do think it would be pretty easy to fake a pregnancy.
Obviously, they're living in the same house. They're sleeping in the same bed. I mean, is he's not seeing her naked? I mean, you know?
Yeah. I don't think we need to go into positional details, but I feel like it's a possibility that you could hide it for a certain amount of time.
You're right. It can be done, and it was done here. They even picked out a name together for their baby boy. They planned on naming him James Ridley. So she took this all the way. David did start to notice some inconsistencies as time went on in the pregnancy. Like any expectant father, he wanted to attend the prenatal appointments. He wanted to attend the ultrasounds, but somehow there was always a reason that got in the way of him doing so. She would say we had doctor's appointments and we would take off work and sit in the waiting room for hours. Then something would always go wrong and she'd get agitated and we wind up leaving.
So she went to the lengths of bringing him to appointments and then just being, oh, I'm so annoyed. We're leaving right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could see it in a doctor's office too, couldn't you? Sometimes the waits are long, and if he's catering to her already, which he kind of sounds like that kind of guy, she kind of runs the show. If she's getting agitated, she's like, I just can't take it anymore. Like, I'm not feeling well now. I can see it. They get up and leave.
Okay.
Oh, was that agreement or was that? That was a long sigh. I know you're tired.
I just think when you're having a baby and your partner's coming along and you're going to either hear the heartbeat or you're doing ultrasound or whatever, you'll sit in that waiting room for 2 hours. I don't care who you are.
It'd be interesting to see some of her tactics because she was fairly successful up until a point, and that point would be November 14th when there is no baby. And then as the months continue, we hit January of 2015. Dinelle changed her story again. This time she posted to social media that she already had the baby. So I imagine friends and family were getting on her like, what the hell is going on? I mean, obviously you can't carry a baby 11 months. David is on this bandwagon as well, starting to really ask tough questions. This is a text exchange between David and a friend named John on March 2nd, 2015. John.
I'm sorry to hear that. What's going on?
David. A lot of fighting with family. Almost kicked all of them out yesterday. John.
D and the girls?
David. Yep. John.
Fuck, bro. I'm sorry. I'm here if you need anything. D still hasn't had the baby?
David. No, she has been lying to me when the little guy is going to be here. She has an appointment on the 16th, and if I don't go to this one and find out what the hell is going on, she's gone. John.
Seriously, that's kind of fucked up.
David. Yes, it is. I know as much as you do about the baby. Something has always come up and went wrong every time I was going to the doctor with her, so I've never been to the doctor with her. John.
Do you think she's trying to hide something from you?
David. Yes, I do. I wish she would tell me what the fuck it is. A couple days later, David conversed with another friend named Frank. Frank.
Everything going okay on the home front?
David. We all sat down and talked things out. She has an appointment on the 16th, and if I don't get some answers, they will move out. Frank.
Good to hear it's moving toward a more open and honest conversation, man.
David. And I made sure the girls were there so they know what is going on. Frank.
They deserve to be. Their life too.
David is really taking a stand now and calling Dinelle out on her bullshit finally. And he's not making this private. I mean, he's sharing it publicly with friends and family that there is something really weird going on here. And he's had it. There is a date now. He's put forth an ultimatum.
Well, I'm sorry, but at this point, this is pretty freaking embarrassing.
Yeah.
You had a baby shower and there is no baby. Obviously, if there's an impending due date, you've probably got a room ready, probably bought things. It just seems like an ultimatum is the minimum.
Would you be that person who was pissed if you bought them a nice baby gift and you're like, what the fuck?
I would think this was so far-fetched that I don't think I would be mad about it simply because this is not normal. There's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, I can understand how people went along with this for 9 months because she did a damn good job. This is the time, though, now when this due date has passed. And not only has the due date passed, it was November 14th. We're now into March. That's when these text messages occurred, March of the following year. We have David and Dinelle waiting for this March 16th OB appointment. And the day would come. As you might imagine, they missed the appointment again.
Oh, shut up.
Apparently, the couple's washing machine had flooded, spilled water all over the floor, and on the way out the door, Dinelle slips on the water and and falls. She must have done a really good fall. Like, this lady can act, you know?
Yeah, somebody get her a movie deal.
Well, it could be coming, sadly. Dianelle promised to reschedule this appointment, and she would. She scheduled it for only 2 days later, on the 18th. David is continuously putting more and more pressure on Dianelle. Most likely due to this pressure Dianelle was feeling on the night of the 16th, she now decided to post an ad on Craigslist for free maternity clothes. Fairly quickly after she posts, Dianelle receives a response from 26-year-old Michelle Wilkins.
She had put an ad out for maternity clothes that she was giving away. So it almost felt like a gift from the universe in a way. I needed some. I was getting a lot bigger. They weren't the right size for her, and she was simply giving them away.
Nowadays, it's Facebook Marketplace. I mean, everybody's seen those memes. These husbands waiting in a parking lot with some $2 item, and they're joking around about how they're risking their life. But
yeah,
in reality, you kind of can risk your life.
I feel like it wasn't as well known, even back then. And I say back then, this was 2015. I just feel like the world was safer even in 2015.
It felt like it. Yeah, it definitely felt like it.
Now, just 7 months prior to Michelle responding to this Craigslist ad, she and her boyfriend Dan had received some shocking news. She was pregnant.
At least surprise, a happy one. There is some anxiety or fear that comes along with any major change that happens in your life, but I'm grateful for Dan. We were friends for a long time before we were together as a couple, and he said, whatever you need, I'm here for you.
She honestly sounds like a super grounded person. Doing this research, I can tell by how she conducts these interviews, how she held herself in trial. She's far more mature than her age. And you can kind of hear it in that, the way they did embrace this. Dan sounds the same.
It sounds like this was definitely something that wasn't planned, mm-hmm. but they both seemed super responsible and honestly chill about it. It didn't seem like this was some dramatic occurrence in either one of their lives, which is pretty admirable.
They had a baby shower. Friends and family were there. They were really preparing for their baby girl's arrival. They had a great support system in place. Mentally, they were embracing every step. They were looking forward to the future, and they were really dreaming of everything they would do as a family. And we know how that goes. You have kids, you think about their future, your hopes for them. They even had the perfect name picked out for their little girl, Aurora.
We decided on Aurora pretty early on because of the Aurora lights. We liked really natural, nature-based names.
I love the name Aurora.
I do too. Sounds a little tree hugger-ish, like they probably did watch the solar eclipse this week.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool where it came from. They are a bit of what you would refer to as tree huggers. I don't really know any other terminology. They are from Colorado. Yeah. It makes sense, right?
Yeah.
When Michelle initially responded to that Craigslist ad, she got no response back from Dianelle. And she kind of took this as a sign. She didn't really need the maternity clothes anyway. She really just wanted more, and they were free, which is the perfect price tag. She was content to just forget about it. This was until she received a message the next day asking when she'd like to pick them up. Because Michelle had some errands to run that next morning, she suggested noon that day. And at approximately 11:51 a.m., Michelle arrived alone to 1620 Green Place. This is where Dianelle lived. She was also home alone. Her daughter's at school and her fiance at work. David, her fiance, would be back around 2 o'clock because this was the day that they were going to go to that prenatal checkup appointment together. So Michelle gets there. She enters the residence. They both go upstairs, Dianelle and Michelle, to the dining area.
Within this first interaction, Michelle does make note that Dinelle does not look like she's 2 weeks overdue, as Dinelle had told her. And although Michelle finds this weird, she shrugs it off, telling herself everyone is different when carrying babies. In reality, she hadn't been around that many pregnant women in her life, so she didn't really have a good idea of what a woman would look like being 2 weeks overdue. Dinelle handed Michelle a bag of maternity clothes, and the two women started conversing.
When I went inside and we talked for a while, and she had this little pet rabbit that she let me pick up and hold, and we talked about pregnancy, we talked about things we were excited for, or our family. She told me about her daughters. And there were a few times when I motioned to leave or mentioned that I had other things to do, and she sort of talked over me.
This would never fly in my life. I'm not a talkie talker, but this was Michelle's personality. She was very much an extrovert. She very much liked to talk to other people. I know this would never work for you either, Amber, so I guess we'd probably be safe from something like this, but
I do have a hard time cutting people off. At some point, I stop being super kind about it and eventually get impatient.
What's your time limit, out of curiosity? Would you give it a time stamp?
You know, it just really depends on the situation. I had a rep today stop trying to sell me some water, and very kindly, I tried to tell him no thank you. When he kept being persistent, I was very impatient with this particular person.
Would you give it like 5 minutes?
In that situation today, not even 2 minutes. In this situation we're talking about, I would probably get anxious about the 5 minute mark, maybe 7.
Oof, that's a long time. Think about it, 7 minutes.
I know, but if she's talking about her kids and she gave you something for free, you feel obligated, right?
Yeah.
Jeez, this lady's giving me free clothes.
I feel like she would have just let me go because I'm so awkward.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Like, you see those memes about, oh, they kidnapped me. And then they show the person just being themselves. And they're like, well, here you go. Take them back, kind of thing. That would be me. I'm not fluent with people.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm safe.
I mean, even if she wanted to cause you harm, she'd probably let you go. She'd be like, I'll just try the next one.
For Michelle, they continued this conversation for about an hour. Towards the end, the conversation did take a turn, solely focusing on Dinelle and her dissatisfaction with her relationship and her life in general. Dinelle would tell Michelle that she felt disconnected from her partner, David. He worked long hours, and when he got home, Dinelle would go to the gym. So they weren't spending a lot of time together. The same was said about her teenage daughters. The connection they once had was gone. Basically, to me, it sounded like they're going through that teenage stage where they just didn't want to talk to their mom anymore. It was almost kind of like a sob story that Dinelle was giving to Michelle, and it was working. Michelle was getting the vibe that Dinelle was a very lonely woman, not just from this conversation that they were having, but also because every time Michelle went to leave, Dinelle would ignore her and talk over Michelle. Realizing that trying to be subtle wasn't going to work here, Michelle decided to just stand up and start walking towards the front door in an attempt to leave.
Was at the door, ready to walk outside, and she says, oh, I have some girl clothes downstairs that somebody gave me before I found out I was having a boy. Do you want them? And intuitively, I had that sensation wash over me. I have everything I need. But for fear of being impolite, I decided to stay. She actually physically reached across me and closed the door in front of me.
This is the moment in every single podcast, movie, TV show, whatever, where I start asking myself, what is the end game? How do you think you're going to get away with it? You have somebody in your own home. You don't think that they mentioned to somebody else that they were going to stop there. It starts to unravel for me here. Go ahead.
Well, I guess that's where you question too. Was this premeditated? I mean, we think it was, right? She legitimately did have maternity clothes that she gave her. I wonder if there was part of her, though, that this was an impromptu decision. She wasn't 100% until this point where she's like, yeah, I'm fucking doing it. As far as Michelle is concerned, you heard her, and she touches on this in some of her interviews about the negative consequences of being polite in situations that make you feel uncomfortable, because we all do it. And this is the moment that Michelle says she regrets the most, being polite.
I'm not going to go into other podcast mantra, but there are other podcasts out there that say, be rude. I'm not going to say the rest of it, but it's true. If you feel uncomfortable in a situation, don't try to be nice.
Can I just say something? All those taglines, be weird, be rude. So fucking annoying. Can we just, you know, mention it when it's necessary, like here? Anyways, continue.
I know.
Like, let's make keychains. Well, we're going to have to make up some really inappropriate tagline that we can use now in every episode. I guess it's popular to do that.
You have one already.
What would that be?
Not every victim lights up the room.
Oh, I do stand firm on that. We don't need to sensationalize people who don't need to be sensationalized.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, if I die, no one's going to say that. I hope they don't say that, because that'd be a freaking lie.
Well, I will for laughs and giggles. No, the truth, though.
Yeah. I mean, you could say something like, you know, she knew how to read a room. If she didn't like you,
go hide. I know. There's a lot of value in that, Amber. Don't let anybody tell you any different. Those people who just have nice friends, no thanks. I don't believe in killing with kindness. Okay. So.
All right. Back at it.
Yeah. So Michelle really regrets being too polite. But she can't take it back. This is done. And she would go down into the basement with Dinell. Dinell kind of left her in the basement area, heading into the back storage room. And she was shuffling things around. She was making a lot of noise. Michelle was patiently waiting, feeling a little on edge. Nonetheless, she was waiting to see what Dinell was going to come out with. This was taking quite some time, though. Michelle did change her mind. She stated to Dinell that she didn't need the clothes anymore. She didn't want the clothes at this point. She was going to head out. She had a lot to do yet that day. She thanked Dinell for her hospitality, and then she headed towards the stairs to the exit.
I was going up the stairs, and then she, as I was going up the stairs towards the door, she struck me from behind. Right in my chest, and it's hard to describe exactly what it was. I mean, she hit me, and then it was sort of like almost like pulling up my sweater, kind of scratching at me. After she struck me, I mean, part of me wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt, and I said, did I have a spider or a bug, or, you know, what was it? And she said, oh, I think I got it. And then she did it again. And so I was really confused about what she was trying to do. And she pulled me around by my sweater. She grabbed my sweater and she swung me around, so I was facing the other direction. I kind of jerked myself away and I said, what are you doing? And she said, like, threw her hands up as if in defense and said, well, why would you go into someone's house and do that to them? I felt like I was, you know, that this person is really unstable. And so I just held up my hands and I said, I don't want to hurt you. I just want to leave. She started saying, I don't trust you. You need to wait here while I call the cops. I didn't know where this was going yet. And so she's like grabbing me and trying to shove me towards the bathroom. You know, I'm pushing against her and we're sort of wrestling, you know, as I'm trying to get back towards the door. She was pushing me really forcefully towards the bathroom, and I guess at the last minute she threw me into the side bedroom. She kept threatening to call the cops. And so then I pulled out my cell phone at that moment and I said, well, I'll call the cops then. And she lunged for the phone, and then she started hitting my face repeatedly with her fist. She kept pushing me back until I landed on my back on the bed. First, she grabbed a pillow, and she was trying to smother me with the pillow. And I was sort of windmilling my arms and trying to knock away the pillow. And at one point she did have it over my face, and I was just trying to take deeper, you know, keep breathing, and which was really difficult. And so, but eventually, I guess I knocked it out of her hands because, and pulled it off and knocked it out of her hands because then she just went at me with her bare hands to grab this bottle first from in front of the window, which the way it was floating, I thought it was like oil and vinegar. It was, I don't know. And she picked it up and she smashed it over my head. And that's when I held up my hand. I said, I don't know why you're doing this. I love you. And she said, if you love me, you'll let me do this. And then she stabbed it into my neck.
That was Michelle during trial recounting that altercation with Dinelle. It sounds absolutely terrifying.
I'm actually surprised at how calm and collected she was sharing that story.
This is just a testament to Michelle's strength. She was 7 months pregnant too. Protecting yourself, that's hard at seven. I mean, it's hard to get up off of a chair at 7 months pregnant. The toilet, you know? So Michelle knew she was fighting for her life here. Also the life of her baby girl, Aurora. If you remember towards the end of that audio clip, you heard her talk about that oil and vinegar item that Dinelle struck her over the head with. What that was a lava lamp that was Dinelle's daughter's. So she smashes this lava lamp over Michelle's head. It breaks. There's a large shard of glass, which she then will pick up and stab Michelle in the neck with.
I just remember everything was wet and slippery, and I remember when she stabbed me, and then she removed it, and then she continued to try to choke me after that. I remember thinking of Aurora and feeling like I just thought of her, and I felt like I wanted to survive also for her, and so I fought back harder. And I remember she got up, she pinned down my arms with her legs, and actually used, I remember she was trying so hard to choke me, and then when she got closer, she just bore down with her whole weight on the heel of her hand over my windpipe, and I just remember everything going black.
This is also the point where Michelle would pass out from this attack. You heard her say that everything went black. When she was passed out, Dinelle then took two large kitchen knives and sliced a large incision from one end of Michelle's hip to the other. We know what she's doing here. From this incision, Dinelle removed baby Aurora and ran upstairs with her, placing her in the empty bathtub, knowing that David, her fiance, would be home very shortly. It was just after 1 p.m. Before David arrived, Dinelle wanted to do some cleanup. Blood had soaked through the bedding and into the mattress, and also through the carpet onto the floor. There was a lot of pooling of blood, not as much blood spatter. Dinelle rolls Michelle off the bed, strips the sheets, throws those sheets along with some blood-soaked towels into the washing machine and runs a couple quick cycles. She's very efficient. While the wash is going, the pillows from the bed are placed into garbage bags and hidden under a crib she had in the room. She removes all her clothing except for her bra and underwear and places them into these garbage bags along with the other blood-soaked items. One knife is left downstairs in the bedroom, and the other is put in the kitchen sink upstairs. She's really starting to realize this is a much bigger mess than what she had anticipated, and David was on his way home. Dinelle frantically calls him, trying to stall his arrival. After two phone calls and some text messages, she would be successful. She asked him to stop by her daughter's school on the way home to complete some paperwork that needed to be done. And David agreed to do so, not knowing the horror that was occurring in his own home. During trial, David would describe Dinelle's demeanor over the phone as being very calm, no sense of distress, no anxiety, a typical conversation with Dinelle. This is David's account from the police report.
David stated he left work early today and arrived at his residence at about 2:15 p.m. He planned on taking Dinelle to a prenatal checkup appointment. He arrived home and walked down the stairs toward the basement. As he did so, Dinelle walked around the corner covered in blood. She told David she just miscarried and the baby was in the bathtub upstairs. David ran upstairs to the bathroom and found a small baby lying in the bathtub. He rubbed the baby slightly, then rolled it over to hear and see it take a gasping breath. David wrapped the baby in a towel and ran back downstairs. He told Dinelle to get ready to go to the hospital. As Dinelle and David went to David's car, Dinelle grabbed David's cell phone from his truck, saying she was going to call 911. David heard Dinelle talking to someone on the phone he assumed was City of Longmont Emergency Communications. Dinelle then placed the phone back into this truck. They both traveled to the hospital. When they arrived, David escorted Dinelle into the emergency room holding the baby. He then left the hospital to return home to pick up his stepdaughters arriving home from school.
When I arrived, one of the emergency department nurses saw me. She kind of gave me a quick story that Dinelle apparently had delivered preterm baby at home. The placenta, she had said, was still attached to the baby. I saw the neonatal nurse practitioner was there, and apparently they had already pronounced the baby dead. When I arrived, Dinelle and another man were sitting in chairs sort of facing the back wall, and the man was holding the baby, weeping.
That was the attending physician on call when Dinelle and David arrived at the hospital with baby Aurora.
That is so sad. I think you become numb to some things, but holding a baby and crying is so sad to me.
It is, especially when you think it's your baby, because initially Dinelle and David, apparently when they both arrived, were both hysterical. David more so, which we understand why, because he truly believes this is his baby. And Dinelle, this whole time, was screaming, "Save my baby, save him, save my baby," which makes me vomit in my mouth a little bit.
Well, just the fact that she's still pretending it's a baby boy, or...
Save my baby? She was using this kind of show or act to buy herself some time. The medical staff and everybody believed Dinelle at this point that she had delivered this baby at home. And in their minds, Dinelle was also a patient. They were concerned for her health. No one had checked her yet. Every time they would ask Dinelle to evaluate her, she would redirect him toward the baby. There came a point, as you heard the doctor say, that baby Aurora was pronounced dead. Meanwhile, Michelle is waking up on the bloodstained floor of Dinelle's daughter's bedroom in that basement. She's disoriented. As you can imagine, she's lost a ton of blood. She knows that she is in dire straits here. She felt an immense pain in her abdomen, looked down, saw this huge gash. She was bleeding profusely, and she did not know where Dinelle was, if Dinelle was even still in the house. If she was, Michelle knew that she was no match for her at this point. She could not run her. She couldn't fight due to this debilitating pain she was in. Michelle would form a plan.
The first thing I thought I would do was just block the door, and so I just stood up, and my legs, my feet couldn't support me, so I just fell forward and on top of my hand, and when I did that, I just felt the blood seeping through my pants, and I could feel my intestines outside of my body. And so I just stumbled back to the bed and laid down on my back and picked up my phone. I kept trying to put my phone in, and my fingers were fumbling, and so it accidentally swiped onto the emergency screen, so I ended up just making the call from there.
911, address of your emergency?
1620, Green Place.
1620 what?
Green Place.
I can't understand the street.
Green Place.
Green Place. Green like the color?
Yeah.
Okay, what? Tell me what happened.
She cut me.
Who cut you?
Downstairs, I don't know.
Okay, hold on.
I responded to.
Hang on. Hold on.
Please. I'm downstairs.
Okay, who cut you?
This girl I responded to was ready for that.
What did she cut you with?
A knife. I'm pregnant. She cut me in my stomach. Okay. I'm afraid.
She cut you in your stomach?
I'm pregnant.
Okay. What is the suspect's name?
I don't remember.
Hang on, okay? I'm going to take this. She is.
I'm bleeding out.
I know. You need to stay on the phone with me, okay? I'm getting everybody to you, okay? I know, you stay with me, okay? I got everybody coming to help you. You stay on the phone. Don't hang up. How far along are you?
7 months.
7 months? Okay. Are you alone in the house?
No.
You stay with me. Don't go to sleep. You stay with me. You're downstairs in the basement. And are you alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I left the door.
Don't you go to sleep, okay? You stay on the phone with me. Can you tell me, did she have any other weapons besides a knife?
She broke a glass.
She broke a glass? Did she stab you with the broken glass also?
Yeah. How long?
They're on their way, okay? I need you to take a towel and put it on your wound. How many wounds do you have?
No, no. She did it all the
time. More than one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Help. Help.
We got everybody in the way. They're trying to find you now.
I heard the doorbell ring. Is that them?
Okay.
Are they ringing the doorbell? She cannot get to it.
Help.
She's downstairs.
Yeah, they're here.
Okay, I'll let you go.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be a 911 operator. She was definitely doing her best to keep her awake. It's just always hard for me. You know, you don't hear a ton of compassion. There was no coddling her. Did she feel like she was going to die before they got there? Asking all of the questions.
In this situation, I know why they do it. Number one, for the officer's safety. That's always a priority. I know it sounds somewhat selfish, but they want to make sure the help will be able to help.
Right.
Secondly, she knew that this was an act that was done by another person to Michelle. So they do oftentimes try to get as much info as they can right there and then, so that if this person does pass away, which Michelle sounds pretty rough, that they have this 911 call to reference for any leads and eventually hopefully capture the suspect.
Asking me questions when I'm in pain or, in her case, dying. I don't know that I'd want to answer them.
I don't even know if Michelle's really thinking or if she's on autopilot.
Oh, for sure. She was so out of it.
Either way, I think that's a pretty amazing moment to capture. The affect of Michelle's voice when they did walk in that room and she sees help has arrived. You can hear her voice go up in octaves. You can hear there's a little bit more power behind her words. You can literally feel the relief. And I just think that's a pretty powerful human interaction to capture because we don't often see that. Now, during trial, the first responding EMT named Billy did testify. He recounted when he arrived, it was just a complete bloodbath. He asked Michelle immediately, "Where are you injured?" And she would point to her stomach. Billy pulled down her pants because she had maternity pants on that were high-waisted and, quote, saw her intestines hanging out of her stomach, unquote. Amazingly, through this whole ordeal, Michelle did continue to stay conscious, which is quite a feat. With the first responders there, they continued asking her those questions that you heard the 911 operator ask. Michelle cannot recall or recount too many details from this initial time period when these first responders arrived, which we would expect, but they would safely load her in the ambulance and she was rushed to the hospital. When she arrived, she would undergo emergency surgery. But even then, right up to that surgery, she was awake enough to give investigators the passcode to her phone so that they could find out who had attacked Michelle. That's tough.
That is tough, but that's also brilliant. I wouldn't have even thought about that, but also, like, aren't they at this person's house?
When these investigators and first responders start jumping to conclusions rather than not ruling out any possibilities is when they get themselves in trouble. I've seen it firsthand. So yes, they're at this house, but this is an active scene. You have a living person. The first priority is always to get this person help. And they would be waiting at the hospital for Michelle when she arrived. That's when they got that passcode. And right then the investigation would begin. Once they started going through it, seeing the text messages, they realized that they wouldn't need to look too far because Dinell and baby Aurora were at this same hospital, just a floor above. So both Michelle and Dinell are in the same spot right now as we're talking. They immediately would go to Dinell and begin questioning her.
What are the cuts on your hand?
You know what? I don't know. When I came upstairs and she said that I hit my hand.
Okay, was anyone with you at your house today?
No, I've been by myself all day.
Okay. But Danielle, I've got a problem. There was a young girl in your apartment. And she was cut. Because we've got officers there right now.
At my house?
Yes. Do you know how that happened?
I don't. There wasn't anybody there when I left.
Is it Dinell? Yeah. Is that pronounced right? My name's Danny.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to hang out with you for a bit just to see what's going on, okay? And then we'll get this sorted out as quickly as possible.
I don't know what she's talking about.
What was she saying?
She said there was a woman at my house and...
What's the deal with the girl?
I don't know. She said there was some girl at my house and she kept asking me if I was by myself today and I said I'm always by myself. I was getting ready for my doctor's appointment and she was like, well, did you have any visitors today? And I said, no.
You sure you don't know who that lady maybe she was talking about?
I don't know what's going on, sir. I really wish I did. I'm just about as confused as you guys are.
That's what I'm kind of figuring out. Is there a probability that the DNA of the baby won't match you?
No, she's lying.
100%.
They actually would move forward with a DNA test taken from Dinell and the baby to compare. On top of this, Dinell was also finally examined by an OBGYN who noted and told Dinell that she had not recently been pregnant. Upon being told this by the doctor, Dinell started talking and changing her story a bit.
So she told me that she was at home and that a pregnant woman had come to her house to purchase some baby clothes. And that while she was there, that Michelle had, for some reason, attacked Dinell with a knife. She then said that afterwards, then the pregnant woman had started stabbing herself, and that Dinell was concerned about the welfare of the baby, and so Dinell felt she had to save the baby's life and therefore cut the baby out of her.
I'm not sure if that was a great follow-up story. She's not a quick thinker.
No. So now when you're trying to adapt on the fly, that's plausible for sure. Yeah. Somebody came into my house, started stabbing themselves when they were pregnant just to get maternity clothes, of course. Here's the electronic trail on that.
Yeah, this is a rabbit hole that Dinelle would continue to dig deeper and deeper into. It was after this confession to the OBGYN that the police are informed of this new tale that Dinelle had spun, and this spurred another interview where Dinelle elaborated further into this made-up story that Michelle actually was the one who attacked her. A lot of details are in this. I listened to the interrogation tape. Dinelle just weaves another story that eventually leads to the point where the fight evolves into Michelle being incapacitated and Dinelle, worried for the baby's safety, cuts Michelle open and extracts the baby in order to save the child. So she's a hero. Now, there was no evidence at all to support Dinelle's version of events. The detectives, however, would look at both sides. As I said, they don't want to make any assumptions, and it would become clear and obvious that Dinelle had fabricated this entire version of events. Dinelle was arrested and charged with 9 different counts, one being attempted first-degree murder and another being the unlawful termination of a pregnancy, which turned into a huge point of contention and drew a lot of national speculation. The fact that Dinelle was not charged with the murder of baby Aurora.
Some of you know that from the coroner, who issued a press release a couple hours ago, I learned that the autopsy conducted by an expert pathologist, Dr. Leon Kelly, did not find any medical or physical evidence that the baby, Aurora, ever took a breath after being taken from her mother. In Dr. Kelly's opinion, this was not a live birth. According to Dr. Kelly, and I quote, the autopsy and investigation failed to provide evidence that the child exhibited signs of life outside of the womb. We do not know the exact cause of death of Aurora, as there were no other injuries or other medical issue to explain it. Colorado criminal law, and we talked about this about a week ago, defines homicide as the killing of a person by another. And it defines a person, when referring to the victim of a homicide, as a human being who had been born and was alive at the time of the homicidal act. Person does not include a fetus, even if the child is born following the injury, which ultimately results in its death. On this point, Colorado law is absolutely unambiguous. Now, I understand that many people in the community, and heaven knows I've heard from a lot of them, would like me to have filed homicide charges. However, that is not possible under Colorado law without proof of a live birth. A prosecutor cannot file murder charges when a baby who is killed has not lived outside the body of the mother. As district attorney, I have a sworn duty to uphold, to apply, and to enforce the law as it currently stands. District attorneys do not decide what the law is. They enforce the law as written. I have a sworn ethical duty not to file criminal charges against anyone that are not supported by law in existence at the time and by the admissible evidence, regardless of my personal opinion of the law.
So this is where I have to sign off so I don't get us canceled.
Yes, it's a shame, but I understand exactly what he's saying.
I don't, so. I do, but I don't.
Unfortunately, this is how it always happens, right? You have these laws. The only way to change case law is by trying cases. You have to have the example there, the precedent set in order to change things. There was nothing set before this. We already discussed how there were such few instances of fetal abduction type homicide. So we don't have a lot of case law regarding this. And because of that, they were unable to charge Dinelle with the murder of baby Aurora. So I understand what he's saying to that point. You may remember earlier when we were discussing David picking up Aurora out of that bathtub. In his written police statement, he claimed to see Aurora gasp for air, which would mean that she was alive. This was a huge, huge thing for him to have claimed in his report. Later during trial, he would redact or retract what he had stated prior. At trial, he stated, "The baby had her mouth wide open and it looked as though she was gasping for air." But he never actually saw her gasp for air. It's interesting to see how this changes too, because now he knows this baby isn't his, right? You can't go by one or the other. Because of that, they relied upon the autopsy of the child, which determined that the baby was not born alive. This trial only lasted 3 days, which to me is quick, even a bit shocking. But the defense did not argue whether or not Dinelle did this act. Their main focus was that first degree attempted murder charge, which in order to be valid needs premeditation. We kind of touched on this earlier. The state would argue against the defense, claiming that the evidence suggested there was indeed premeditation. The posting of the Craigslist ad, Dinelle researching a day before the attack, quote, "What happens to a cervix after childbirth," end quote. There was an anatomical image of a woman's bladder on Dinelle's phone the day before. And lastly, there was the theory that Dinelle had no job, no money. She was facing being kicked out of her home, not just herself, but her daughters as well, if this lie was to be discovered, which I say are all very valid points. And this is what they're saying is determining that there was premeditation to this situation. The defense, of course, they argued this, that this was a spur of the moment decision, hoping that the jury would find Dinelle guilty of attempted manslaughter, which carried a much lighter sentence than your first degree murder.
She had a baby shower for a baby boy. She told her friends that she had a baby boy. She was going to have a baby boy. All of that shows you that she was portraying having a baby boy. If you're going through all that trouble, don't you think if it's your intent to cut someone's baby out, that you're going to take some time to find a woman pregnant with a baby boy? Why would you put an ad on Craigslist and then not respond to people? If your intent was to cut their baby out, why would you have a whole day go by where you have the whole entire day? Miss Lane had all of March 17th from 8 to 5 p.m. If that was her intent, why didn't she do it then? Why didn't she respond immediately to Miss Wilkins on March 17th? Please come over at 8 a.m. because she knows every single day her husband leaves at 8 a.m. Why wouldn't she give herself as much time as possible? She's cutting someone's baby up. That's what they're alleging. The whole purpose of this is to cut someone's baby up. If that is what her intent was, why wouldn't she do that way earlier? She didn't do that because she never planned, prepared, or processed any of this.
I think that's a pretty weak argument, personally.
She was like, let's make her sound as stupid as possible so it's not even believable. Yes, yeah. This is it. This is our defense. No one is this stupid.
I choose to use my time to address you directly, Dinelle, because up to this very moment, you have refused to acknowledge us, the victims of your violent actions. I am a compassionate person. This is the foundation of the beliefs from which all others grow. It is clear that you need healing, and it is my sincere belief that you get it. However, there were atrocities committed against me and my daughter that sent a ripple of pain out to so many others, and they must be addressed. Those committed against Aurora's father and all of her grandparents, against law enforcement and first responders who cannot unsee the trauma that you created, and against your partner and daughters who surely have guilt, shame, and trauma of their own to wrestle with for the rest of their lives because of you. I did not learn until the trial just how many opportunities you had to do the right thing and then chose not to. You knowingly left me to die multiple times. The only tears that you shed during the trial were those of self-pity to the sound of your own voice as your lies were slowly revealed. And yet, even now, you cannot come clean about what actually occurred. You embrace your narcissistic fantasy to fulfill the lie you created, and it was more important than my right to live and Aurora's right to live. This is a picture of her.
Your Honor, I'm going to object at this point.
Thank you. Ms. Lamb, please direct your comments to me.
I trust the judge to make a wise decision on what you believe to be fair, but I believe that you should receive the maximum penalty because I believe you have lost your privilege to live in our society, not only because of your actions during the attack, but also your actions since the attack. Your inability to acknowledge the immense cruelty and evil you committed only proves you are not fit to walk free amongst us ever again. I hope the counsel you receive reflects that acknowledging the obvious, the proven, that you've committed these horrific acts, the least you can do is to begin atoning for what you did. What is done cannot be undone, but I fervently hope that you use the rest of your time on this earth with meditation and prayer to help you come to terms with what you have done. It is your only chance for healing the hurt that you have caused.
Ultimately, the jury would find Dinelle guilty on all charges, and she was sentenced to spend the rest of her life behind bars, 100 years. Well, I'm glad we wrapped this one.
I am too. You know how I am. I don't like anything with kids, so that's always tough for me. But I don't think we should end with a joke.
What?
No, I mean, I...
We are doing a joke. Have you gone soft? What is this? We don't do trigger warnings. You can't end on a joke now?
Listen, who picks these episodes, okay? Can't you pick something about strippers, hookers? Why do we always have to come back to kids, huh?
I think our audience is getting a little sick of the sexual cases.
Well, then they're going soft.
Go ahead with your Craigslist joke. I'm ready. We all are, in fact, those five who are listening and myself.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, can we say that we're going to CrimeCon again one more time? Because it's almost only a month away.
Sure, delaying this joke. But yes, we are going to CrimeCon. It is about a month away, really. Are you nervous? You're going to have to be on your best behavior.
No, I'm not. Why would I have to be on my best behavior?
Because you are representing the podcast. And yourself. As a mother.
Well,
in her 40s.
But like, not after 5.
Okay, sure, not after 5.
Not after 5.
Yeah, let our hair down at 5.
We're heading to Broadway. Do you even know what Broadway is?
You trying to make me feel like an idiot because I don't? Because I'm not cultured like you?
You just call Tao. What'd you call it? Teo? Teo.
Yeah, Teo. I did indeed. You'll have to school me while we're there. I have no idea what Nashville entails, where the local establishments are, which it sounds like they're in every corner. Did buy a shirt with some fringe on it.
Wow.
It's actually so cute.
Is it really?
Cannot wait to wear it.
All right. Take a tiny second here. Let me look at all these jokes. A desperate woman puts an ad on Craigslist. She writes, "All I want is a man who won't hit me, won't abandon me, and has a large penis. If these conditions apply to you, here's my address." A few days later, she hears a loud knock on the door. "Hello, I saw your personal ad, and I think we're perfect for each other. As you can see, I have no arms, so I can't hit you, and I have no legs, so I cannot run away." Woman. In the third condition, the man. "How do you think I knocked on the door?" See, they're all dirty. All right, well, you have a great week, and we will catch up with you all soon. Bye.
Bye. Did you like that ending?
I don't know. Did you not like that ending?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you want to do a different one?
Nah. We'll just keep it. We're high achievers. Just leave it.
Mm-hmm.